Welcome to Disinformation Wars, a project of the American Foreign Policy Council. I'm AFPC Senior Vice President Ilan Berman. Disinformation Wars is a series of conversations with officials, experts, and practitioners designed to take you behind the scenes of the struggle for hearts and minds of global publics that's now taking place around the world. It's a contest being waged by Russia, China, Iran, and other actors, and the stakes could not be any higher.
A tug of war is taking place over Iran. At the moment, the United States and its European partners are focused on bringing Iran back to the nuclear negotiating table. But there's another struggle that's taking place at the same time, one over the image of the Islamic Republic. It's a struggle between Iran's clerical elite and the opposition forces fighting for a different, more democratic future for the country. Last week, in the pages of the Wall Street Journal, democracy activist Maryam Mimarsadeghi wrote about this struggle. In her article, she laid out how the Iranian regime is employing a sophisticated strategy to disseminate disinformation, carry out false flag operations on social media, and, as she put it, to divide, defame, disable, and demoralize its domestic opponents. I wanted to talk to Maryam and get more details about this effort, as well as its implications for politics within Iran. She would know. Maryam is one of the world's most prominent activists for a democratic Iran. She is the co-founder of Tavana, the e-learning institute for Iranian civil society, which was launched in 2010 to educate Iranians about democracy, human rights, and civic activism. Its sister initiative, Tavana Tech, provides internet freedom, digital safety, and tech literacy to millions. Maryam previously worked at Freedom House, at the International Rescue Committee, and at the International Organization for Migration. She is now a senior fellow at Canada's MacDonald Laurier Institute. Maryam, great to have you on.
Great to be with you.
I want to start with your op-ed. In it, you make the case that the Iranian regime is pursuing a broad and sophisticated strategy to manipulate social media. Could you lay out the contours of this strategy for us?
Yeah, the strategy has evolved over time. So in the beginning, the regime would use social media to do an only a little bit more sophisticated version of what they had been doing for years, really since the revolution, on official state TV and radio, which was to attack the opposition and opposition leaders and to promote their own ideology. What the regime saw pretty quickly is that those attacks against people like me, for instance, what they saw with time is that when they would attack on tweets or on Instagram posts, what would happen is those posts, those tweets would be seen more because of the social media algorithms. And what would happen is that post and that person, that activist, that leader would get more visibility and more credibility because they were seen as being in opposition to the regime and that the regime is coming after them. So it was counterproductive to the regime's interests, that kind of first generation manipulation of social media to promote its own ends. So in that first generation, they had fake accounts and bots that were pushing against the opposition and for the regime line in all kinds of ways. And like I said, in state media, that was the same approach. What's been going on for at least the last couple of years, if not more, is the stopping of that kind of attack. So somebody like me, I'm no longer attacked by fake accounts on social media that are pretending to be pro-Islamic Republic. If I am, it's very few and far in between. What I do get a lot of, and what is very common now within the opposition, is accounts that look and sound like they're opposition, but are really being managed. They were created and managed by the regime itself. And why would they do that? Because those fake regime accounts that are pretending to be opposition, sort of in the pre-internet times, we had moles who would enter the opposition, but all the things they said and did were designed to make the opposition weaker and divided and less capable rather than strong. These fake accounts on social media now are attacking opposition activists and leaders from within the opposition itself. And they are also furthering the kind of discourse that is more radical and is less inclusive and less oriented towards practical, low-risk actions on the ground that can lead to overthrow. So they're really trying to busy the opposition with messaging and approaches that are really, really anti-regime, but for that very reason, are not likely to engender much support and real-world action. And at the very least, are really dividing up the opposition more and more. And, you know, before the internet, we had this too. The opposition, unfortunately, is always criticized for being very divided, factionalized. Well, that's no accident. I mean, the regime has worked on that since the beginning.
So the regime is clearly trying to use these tactics to divide and demoralize the opposition, as you said, and thereby to strengthen its own hold on power at home. Is it succeeding? What has the impact of the regime's social media manipulation efforts been on Iranian civil society?
So we need to start with the first things first, and that is that the movement inside the country to overthrow the regime and have a peaceful transition to a democratic government is one that is gaining strength and momentum. However, that's precisely why the regime is using social media to try and hamper it and slow it down. And it is also important to acknowledge that it is a movement that is very, very much reliant on and in synergy with the virtual world. So it's a double-edged sword when you use technology to, for example, organize protests and get the word out about them, strikes and other things. Because when the technology all of a sudden isn't there, like the regime turning off the internet, or when really prominent activists are not allowed because of Instagram, for example, to post stories about the protests, protest videos and photos and commentary, then, you know, they find themselves extremely disabled all of a sudden and demoralized. And it's no small thing. I mean, we have seen it again and again. And like I said, it's been years now that Facebook, at the very least, is quite aware of how they are being played by the regime. But, you know, these are for-profit companies and their first and primary motivation is profit. And they don't have a profit motive to stop this kind of manipulation of their systems. Even in the United States or in the free world, where there's a lot more discussion and journalism about how these platforms are not operating always to further freedom of expression and freedom of association, they're still always lagging behind public opinion in terms of addressing those crises of how the technology is failing to be a fair and free platform. Well, for places like Iran, it is just so much worse because there is no real sense of accountability to those publics. That's why people like us need to be sounding the alarm and talking about it much more, because ultimately, because there's no profit motive, the US government and other governments of the free world need to be exerting pressure on these platforms, not so that the government, instead of the platforms, is deciding what can and cannot be expressed, but so that there isn't such easy manipulation of the technologies from the repressive regimes. And there are ways to do that. It's just a matter of first acknowledging the problem, prioritizing technological solutions to address them, and then being very transparent with the public about how it's going. I mean, it doesn't really do much to release to the public record with delay some of the accounts that these social media platforms are taking down. We need much more transparency and much more accountability.
But what we're talking about here is a two-way street, right? Because even as Iranian authorities target activists and dissidents, they're also sending their own distinct messages to the world. What are those messages exactly? What are the Ayatollahs saying?
Well, this is where it gets really disconcerting, because as Twitter takes down accounts of prominent activists and opposition leaders, Instagram does the same. What they do allow is regime officials to stay on and to spread their rhetoric and attacks and repressive tactics against the opposition, but also to spread their anti-Semitism and to spread their animus against the West, and to basically present themselves as much more in control and strong than they really are. So it's these platforms are failing basic decency in two ways. One is the obvious censorship and repression and taking down of opposition accounts, both ordinary citizen accounts, citizen journalism accounts, and prominent opposition leader accounts, but then also allowing these regimes to use the platforms unfettered. I mean, it's look at it from the perspective of the regime. They're using an American-made platform to propagandize and make sure that the world sees an image of the regime that is a complete fabrication. And this is not to say anything about the disinformation wars that regimes like Iran, Russia, and China are waging on American discourse about American politics and elections.
So I want to focus for a minute on the pushback against all of this, because you made the case that social media companies like Facebook understand what the regime is doing and aren't doing enough. Is there any motion that you see in that ecosystem? Are there any companies that are aware of what the regime is doing and mobilizing against it?
So in 2014, I wrote an op-ed in Wall Street Journal about how Facebook was taking down Facebook pages that were devoted to civil society and civic organizing. Right at the present, I've been in touch with people at Instagram about specific accounts that they have taken down, and they don't acknowledge that they were wrong to take them down, but upon hearing from me, they bring the accounts back up. So it's very obvious that they know what's happening. They know that their systems are not capable of distinguishing between real reporting of the violation of their rules and mass reporting by automated regime bots. They just don't have the systems in place. But even if they were really motivated to address these issues, they're still pretty complicated. And without real investment in artificial intelligence that is not in the English language, they're not going to be able to address the issue. It's not as though there are individuals at Twitter or Instagram that don't like the Iranian people organizing for democratic change. It's just that the systems that they have created and the lack of attention from real human resources, it's astonishing to me what little they're willing to put into this in terms of actual humans that have a care and concern and a willingness to spend time on these issues. It takes a long time, for example, to get an email response back from Instagram. And then what do? They bring the accounts back up. So it's not as though it's been a delayed response because they think they were in the right. There needs to be serious discussion at the highest levels in these companies and then real investment to be able to have the artificial intelligence to distinguish between mass reporting that that these regimes orchestrate through bots and real reporting of violations. And you know, even there I'm being generous because, for example, Instagram's own algorithms give preference to stories that are about other things and not about protests. And that just needs to be explained. Why is that? Why is it that if you post about your dinner at the restaurant down the street, that gets a lot more views than if you post a story about today's protests?
A natural question here is whether America has a role in the fight. In previous episodes of the podcast, we focused on the problematic state of U.S. messaging towards Iran and how we and the Western media in general are missing the big stories there. This is obviously one of those. But is there anything that the U.S. government or the private sector can do to diminish the effectiveness of the Islamic Republic's social media manipulation?
Absolutely, yes. It is imperative that the United States government and other governments in the free world do this, but it's also not as difficult as it might seem. I mean, we need good legislation and good congressional oversight on these social media companies so that they're not just accountable to shareholders and they're not just accountable to profit. They're also accountable to the United States national interest. I mean, after all, these companies were founded because of American freedom, because of American openness. The leadership at these companies can't come and you know, base their operations in Silicon Valley and make use of all of these opportunities that America provides, and then hand it all over to, you know, the Chinese Communist Party and Putin and Iran. Can you imagine something like this happening during the Cold War years? I mean, we as a country used to take our own position in the world and our own responsibility to democracy and a democratic future for ourselves and the rest of the world so much more seriously. We are right now our biggest enemy because it's all on us. We're not taking the problem seriously enough. We are not recognizing how these regimes are collaborating and working against us and our own people, because we are so polarized and navel-gazing, in great part, again, because of these social media companies and how political discourse is being shaped online in social media. We are so focused on opposing each other in partisan ways that we can't come together on the basics and say, well, of course, we shouldn't have social media companies that are based in the United States being used by these regimes to basically repress. Activists inside the country have enough problems. They really get demoralized when they see that American-made social media is on the side of the regime that is crushing the people.
Finally, let's zoom out a bit. Iran is currently in tremendous ferment. Issues like demographics, like regime succession, and like environmental problems have come together to create an enormously volatile domestic political environment. But all of that is being lost amid the current media focus on the Iranian nuclear file. So what are Iranian activists and Iranian dissidents trying to tell the world today?
What the people of Iran are trying to tell the world is that regardless of how you approach the nuclear issue, and regardless of even having diplomatic successes with the regime, the nature of the regime is not going to change. And the nature of the regime is one that is extremely duplicitous and anti-liberal, anti-Western, anti-woman, anti-Iran. And if anything, with concessions and appeasement from the West, that nefarious nature is only going to get worse and not better. So in the short term, long term, however you look at it, the free world has a much better chance of achieving, even if it's only focused on its security interests and not its moral interests, much more likely to achieve those interests if it invests in the Iranian people. The Iranian people are no different than the people of South Africa or India or Eastern Europe or Chile or any other place that has transitioned from severe repression to a free and democratic country. The Iranian people are capable of it, demanding of it, deserving of it. And even from a purely self-interested position, the United States can only benefit from helping them to achieve a democratic future, because all of the people of the region, and by extension, the world, will be far more secure, stable, and peaceful.
Mariam, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Elon. It's a pleasure as always.
Thank you for tuning in to Disinformation Wars. To learn more about the American Foreign Policy Council and our work on public diplomacy, visit us online at www.afpc.org. And as always, we hope you'll join us again next time.